The wheel of time turns, and ages come and pass, leaving memories that become legend. Legend fades to myth, and even myth is long forgotten when the age that gave it birth comes again. Welcome to Adventures in Randland. I'm Andy.
And I'm Wendy.
And today we will be discussing The Great Hunt, chapters 9 through 13. And in our little two-minute conversation before we got started, we both think this is going to be a longer episode. So if that's what you guys want, you know, or you person in South Africa, if that's what you want, then you may get it today. So overall thoughts on this week's reading, Wendy?
Wow. It's like really taking off. The story is developing. I'm so excited.
Absolutely. This is the week that I think, yes, that's a very good way to put it. I feel like the storyline finally started inching towards where the book's going to be taking you. And there's all kinds of twists and turns we haven't gotten to yet in this book. This is a fantastic book. Not that the last one wasn't. The last one was, but it was also your standard Lord of the Rings style,
right,
you know, fantasy book. Whereas this one kind of leaves that box that it had put itself in and finds its own way, you know? Alright. So we begin on chapter 9, titled Leave Takings. This is another chapter that has multiple points of view. It's Rand and it's Bale Domon. Had we met Bale Domon yet?
I don't think so.
I don't think we had either. The problem with having read the series multiple times is that you forget when characters get introduced sometimes, especially like side characters, or I don't know if you call them side, but Bale Domon is not a main character. He's not quite that top level tertiary character. He's that next one down, you know, like he shows up a few times during the story. He plays a role a few times during the story. But he doesn't really have an impact on the story all that much. Except for being there when he's needed to be there. If that makes sense.
Right.
So, I like Bale. And when, I think it's because of the audiobook, anytime I read a Bale point of view, he sounds like a pirate in my head. So that's how I read him. So, yeah, I mean, he's just, you know, he's a smuggler. He's a pirate. So... All right, so we're going to start in Rand's point of view, and they're getting ready to take off, chasing after the horn and after the dagger, after Pat and Fane and the Trollocs, and Rand apologizes to Loyal, who accepts his apology, and then he apologizes, or tries to apologize, to Perrin and Matt. And that one doesn't go over quite as well.
No, it went over, you know, like a lead stone.
Now, just out of curiosity, do you think if he had just been apologizing to Perrin, do you think Perrin would have forgiven him and accepted the apology?
No, because he tried to apologize to Perrin before.
That's true. I may be giving Matt too much credit here, but...
Yes.
Yeah, okay.
Because you like Matt. He's your favorite.
I do like Matt, and he is my favorite. And eventually you will see why, and you still won't understand, but you'll see why. All right, so they turn around, they walk off, they storm off, and we get an awful lot of that in today's reading of Rand...
There's a lot of storming.
Yeah, Rand trying to... like, make up with his best friends, and his friends, like, doing everything they can to avoid him. So.
Yeah.
Yeah. If Rand rides up to meet him in the front, they drop back to the back, and vice versa. So.
Yeah.
All right. So, they still haven't left yet. Lan pulls Rand aside, and kind of aggressively, I felt, tells him, you have one more lesson to learn. It's how to sheathe the sword. Rand's like, I know how to sheathe the sword. I'm not brand new. And he's like, no, there may come a time when you're in a fight that you don't think you can win, and you'll have to sheathe the sword inside yourself, which just sounds awful, and I don't understand how that can help. That's just me.
I think that he meant, like, that he can't let the anger take over him.
Oh, so you're going completely metaphorical on this.
Yes.
Okay, cool. That makes way more sense than sticking a sword into you.
Yeah.
Like I'm picturing doing it with, like, a little knife and it would hurt too bad. I can't imagine with a sword.
Jesus, Andy. You can't be serious that you didn't take it.
That's where my brain goes. You know, Lannan's not much of a joker. I take him at his word.
Oh my god.
All right, round two on the show. All right, so the Amaranth's kind of giving her little speech to send them on their way. You know, hey, you guys are doing what you're doing is vital to the world, and you need to get along and get that the horn back, because if the horn is in the enemy's hands, then it will fight for the enemy instead of for us. So
that's kind of important.
Yeah, that would be very important. Could you imagine all the heroes coming back and fighting against the good guys? That doesn't sound like a good thing. So
no.
But as Rand kind of feels that watcher, like he feels like he's being watched again, which has happened a few times since he's been in Faldara. And he kind of turns to see if he can see what it is, and an arrow goes flying past him, and it nicks the Amaranth, and it kills the guy standing behind the Amaranth. Poor guy. He's just happens to be there. Yes, and he's like, oh, I died. That sucks. I'm not dead yet. But I think I'm getting better.
I feel happy. Shut up, you're dead.
I think I'll go for a walk. God, I love that movie. I don't know why. All right. So the Amaranth's kind of like, oh, that's a really bad shot for a white cloak. You know?
Yeah.
And then she kind of gives Rand a look like, I'm not even so sure that was aimed at me. So she knows a lot more than what she acts like she knows, or what she shows the world that she knows, so.
Exactly.
She's a schemer.
Well, she is the head of the Aes
Sedai. Yeah, exactly. She is the head schemer of all schemers.
Exactly.
And then the last thing that really happens, at least in my opinion, and the Rand point of view here, is that we're introduced to Hurin.
Yeah.
Ingtar introduces him as a sniffer. So, what are your thoughts on Hurin?
I just think it's funny that they call him a sniffer.
Yeah, that is a great name. But that, I mean, that's more or less what he's doing.
Yeah.
You know?
But I just picture him with this snout.
Late.
But it did make me wonder if he has part wolf or something like that in him.
It is very similar. And it's not... It's funny that you brought up the wolf brother. Because this is another non-power... Or non-one-power power. Say that five times fast. But where you have the Wolf Brothers one, I feel like... Oh, Men? Men's power is not of the One Power. You know, where she sees her visions and whatnot. And there are a couple more that come up later that we'll talk about later when they come up. But it doesn't happen all that often in this world, but occasionally you have people who just... have a power, and that seems to be Hurin's, and it seemed to have just kind of happened one day, like the wolf power, the wolf brother for Perrin. You know, he just kind of was in the right place at the right time, or the wrong place at the wrong time, if you want to look at it that way. And boom, here he goes. But he still, I find it funny that he still kind of hides from the Aes Sedai because he doesn't want them poking and prodding him. You know.
Right.
And if you remember back in the first book, when Perrin became the Wolf Brother, the story that Elias told was kind of the same way, that he just got tired of being prodded by the Aes Sedai, so he took off. So, yeah. Which is a nice way to say he killed...
They want to know how things work.
Right. And not all of them are...
If you're not channeling, but you have some power, we need to know why.
And not all of them are nice like Varen, you know, I mean...
No, you have that evil bitch.
Yes, yes, you certainly do. Leandrin? Is that who we're talking about?
Leandrin, yes.
Yeah, not a big fan, huh?
No.
What if I told you that she ends up being the only reason why Rand can win in the long run?
Still don't like her.
All right, well, I made that up, so. All right. You're going to have to wait, bud. Okay, come here.
Anything
else from Rand's point of view here?
I think he pretty much well covered it. Added the flavor.
I hear point of view, and this is another sidetrack because that's what I do. We're going to have a real long episode, so why not sidetrack all over the place? There is a book, I think there's two of them that are Star Wars books called From a Certain Point of View. And I highly recommend them to anybody who either, A, likes Star Wars or just likes, you know, the fantasy genre in general. The one is basically retelling what was the third movie that was made? Return of the Jedi? It was basically retelling Return of the Jedi, but solely from Yoda's point of view.
Oh, cool.
So you get to see it a different way. So I don't remember what the other one was, but it wasn't as good as that one. It was still good, but it wasn't as good as that one. And I bring that up because the vast majority, in my opinion, of Star Wars books that I've read are terrible. So they're just not good books. So
and this relates how?
It doesn't. It's a side tangent. because in my notes, I see Bail point of view, and I hear point of view, and I think of the name of the book. So, you should know this. You should know my brain does what it wants it to do. What it wants to do. All right.
Well, I sometimes question your brain.
I do too, which is scary. So, all right. So, we move on to Bail. Bail's point of view. Bail Domon and his ship, I should have written that down. The Spray? Is that right?
Mm-hmm.
I think?
Yep.
Okay. So, he's...
He's back.
Yep. He heads to Ilion and ends up in an inn called Easing the Badger. I've mentioned before how much I love the names of the inns in this story, and this one's no different. I think that's a great name. I would definitely stay at Easing the Badger. So, inside he meets up with three men who are kind of shady. And they ask him to sail to Mayan, and they're going to give him 1,000 gold marks for doing it, which is a whole bundle of money. Yeah. He doesn't want to do it, but for that kind of money, he feels like he has to. What is that? I'm going to have to check that out.
Well, he's shady on his own. So.
That's true. He is a smuggler, so...
But maybe he's a smart struggler because he's like, you know, if they're going to pay me this much, maybe they'll kill me at the end.
And he doesn't seem like that bad of a guy either, you know, I mean, for a smuggler. So.
No.
He's kind of like Johnny Depp, you know, I mean.
Well, you mean like as in the Pirates of the Caribbean, Johnny Depp?
That's correct, yes.
As the Dread Pirate.
Are you going to go Princess Bride on us?
No,
Dread Pirate Roberts or whatever his name is.
Jack Sparrow.
Yeah. Yeah. Exactly. So he's also given a sealed letter to be given to the dockmaster, and that's how he's going to get his the second half of his money, basically, and how he's going to pick up the person he's supposed to be bringing as well at the, with that. So, so his second in command then comes up to him and says, "Hey, we had another crew member killed. That makes three, I think. And there's strangers trying to board the Spray, and there's all kinds of weird stuff going on." So he's like, "Yep, we're out of here. Let's go." So he takes off. As soon as he takes off, he opens up the letter, and he sees that in the letter, he's being called a dark friend, and whoever has the letter is free to take everything that's his. Just seize it, keep it. So that's pretty cool, you know? So what did you think of his collection that they brought up? So he had a light rod, which I think is just like a lantern, but I saw it as a lightsaber, of course. Well, it's a light rod. You had the large cat skull, which I'm pretty sure is a saber-toothed tiger skull.
That makes sense. That's what I thought.
And you had...
Well, remember, he is a smuggler, so like... He takes the cream of the crop of what he's taking.
Yeah, the interesting thing, you bring that up. I feel like he's a smuggler out of necessity for his personality, because he's a collector more than anything.
Yeah.
He wants cool shit, so he's like, hey, if I'm a smuggler, then I get all this cool stuff, and I can decide what's mine.
So. Exactly.
And he seems
kind
to have
like an Indiana Jones.
Yes. Yeah, that's a good comparison. And he seems to have a pretty good idea of what he's looking for, too. So, like, he knows what is worth some stuff and what isn't, you know? I mean...
Yeah.
So, and then he also had, among his collection was also what appears to be a seal for the Dark One's prison. So that's probably not good.
Yeah.
That's the Quaendiar disc.
Yeah.
You chill, okay?
But do we think that he really knows what it is for?
No. I think he knows that it's Quaendiar, which makes it valuable.
Right. Because it can't be broke.
Right. But he doesn't know. There's no way I would think that he knew it was a seal to the Dark One's prison. If he did,
yeah.
He would either A, break it if he was a dark friend, or B, get it the hell away from himself if he wasn't a dark friend.
Yeah. Like, he'd sink it into the middle of the river.
Right.
When he's sailing.
Exactly correct. So he changes his route and decides, hey, we're going to head west to Ebu Dar, and then from there we'll head further west to Almuth Plain. Anything else from Bale's point of view?
Nope.
Almuth Plain. What is that?
I read the letter.
Yeah, exactly. Do you remember Almuth Plain coming up earlier?
Say again?
Do you remember where he's eventually going to be headed? Do you remember that coming up earlier in our story? Almuth Plain?
There's so many endings.
That's why I bring it up. That's what I'm here for.
I can't remember.
Okay, well, that's perfectly fine. That's why I'm going to tell you. When Faenus escapes, that's part of what
right.
was written on the wall, is I will see you in Almuth Plain. At Almuth Plain.
Yeah.
So that seems to be where our story is kind of pushing towards, is Almuth Plain. So, all right. Anything else on Chapter 9? You're not going outside. You can wait.
No, you're right. I'm not.
Because it's too hot for you out there, and you'll be out there for 30 seconds, and then you'll want to come right back in. If anybody wants a dog, my phone number is... Alright. Chapter 10. Titled, The Hunt Begins. So we're still with Rand's group. Rand and Matt and Perrin and all
yeah.
them. And they're chasing the horn, and they're headed south, led by Hurin and Ingtar. But Hurin's really doing the leading. He's the one who sniffs.
Yeah.
And Rand continues trying to apologize to Perrin and Matt, and Perrin and Matt continue to play the nope. I am going to go the opposite way that you're going. Whichever way, wherever you are, I am not.
Yes, so if you come back to us here, we're going to go to the front of the line.
Yep, exactly.
The front of the line, we're going to go back to the back of the line.
I do find it interesting that Loyal, like, immediately accepted his apology.
Yeah.
He's like, you're my friend, Rand, it's fine. Meanwhile, Matt and Perrin, who've known him his whole life and have been his best friends for his whole life, it's like, you said something mean to me. I hate you forever.
Well, I think also Loyal is also older and wiser in that sense. Like, where Matt and Perrin are still, like, they have bruised egos. They're still acting like little kids, in a sense.
And
Loyal is just, you know...
And I'll say again, you might disagree with me on this, and that's fine. It's not certainly not canon or anything, but I think if it was just Perrin that they would have been okay by now. Like, I feel like having Matt there is kind of the wild card.
That's just my opinion, though. I don't know.
I say that because Perrin's so... But he's so level-headed, you know? I mean, I don't know. Regardless.
Well, the thing is usually those two are at polar ends.
Right.
So now that like, I imagine this like a seesaw. And now that Rand's at the other end of the seesaw, it kind of, like, knocked Matt out of the way. So Matt's in the center. And he's tilting more towards Perrin.
Okay. I like it. We're going to have to... compare everything in this entire series to a seesaw by the time we're done. What's the moral of the 14 book story? It's a seesaw. All right. So they head out on the trail. They find some Trolloc tracks, which kind of like assures everybody that Huron knows what he's doing, that they're on the right track. Because they're kind of headed the wrong way, like the opposite way that Ingtar thought they would go.
Right.
He assumed they were going to head off into the Blight and head to the Dark One with it, and they're going the other way. So.
Right.
So.
And they're running hard and fast.
Oh yeah, yeah. They're
and they want to keep up with them, but they're like, who was it? Ingtar wanted to keep up with them, but he's like. If you can't push them that hard, it's not going to do the horses any good if they're dead.
And,
whereas the Trollocs don't care about those.
Yeah, and that's as much Uno as anybody who's like, hey, this isn't good, guys. This can't happen.
Yeah.
I like Uno, too. He's a character who is kind of like Bail Domon, where he's a... he is a tertiary character who's not really ever a main character, but I still like him. So... And Massima plays a role later, too. He's a character in here, and he plays his role as well, kind of the same way, you know, semi-major character. So, all right. So, Rand opens up his, his bundle of clothing, and, or his suitcase. It's not a suitcase, but you know that's the way I'm going to call it. And he sees that all of his clothes are fancy, and he's like, God, Moraine, what are you doing?
Yeah, you know, exactly.
Leave me alone. I'm not your puppet.
I wanted serviceable clothes.
Right.
And I love, who was it who said, they are serviceable. They're just fancy serviceable.
Yeah, which doesn't help with the whole Matt and Perrin thing, because they think he's all high and mighty, and now he's got all these fancy clothes to go along with being all high and mighty, so.
Yeah.
So, yeah, and it also doesn't help that Ingtar says, well, yeah, Moraine personally saw to your packing, so.
So yeah, yep. Going back, I remember Moraine had said before that they left, when her and... that Amaryllis and Seat were talking, that she would be able to do something to, like, ward off people from seeing them. Did she do that? I can't remember if she did do that.
That's
or
a good...
they just kind of skipped that.
That's a good question. I wonder if part of her packing and what she packed had something to do with that. Like, if she put something on stuff of his to kind of... I don't know. It never really comes up, so.
Yeah.
So Rand goes and gets his food from Massima, and he sits down with Ingtar and Matt, Perrin, Loyal to eat. And it's the first time that him and Matt and Perrin really share a space, so that's kind of cool. It's like, okay, so maybe we won't always hate each other, so. They're still not.
Either that or they just didn't want to spill their food.
Right. They're still not best of friends right now.
They're young men. They're more interested in eating than their anger.
I'm not that young of a man, and I'm always interested in eating.
Well, yeah, I know. That's what I meant.
I think I'm going to do salmon tonight. All right. So, Rand questions Ingtar on why Uno and Massima are looking at him strangely. Ingtar tells him that Uno wants to know whether he's worthy of the Heronmark's sword. So we've kind of seen this before where people see a young man with a Heronmark's sword and all of a sudden they're like, I want to fight him. I want to see if he deserves it. So whereas I'd be like, I trust that you know what you're doing. I'm good. Thanks.
Yeah. Well, and it's so funny because all of his clothes have herons on them, too.
Oh, yeah. He's full of herons. Mr. Heron. Rand Al Heron.
That's it.
And as for Massima, he explains that Massima fought in the Aiel War. And when he looks at Rand, all he can see is that he's an Aiel. And that he does look a lot like an Aiel, Ingtar says, but if Moraine tells him that he's from the Two Rivers, then he must be from the Two Rivers, but he does look Aiel. So,
yeah.
Another thing here, a quick note, I don't know, we haven't really gotten all that into Uno yet, but Uno, every time he speaks throughout the entire series, he throws a bloody in every third word. And it's fantastic. You know, I mean, he cusses. He curses like a sailor the entire story.
You always need one of them.
No, exactly. He'll have interactions with Nynaeve in one of the later books where she gets all mad at him because, you know, he's cursing. So he tries to tell her, have a conversation with her without cursing, and he can't do it. Like, he's breaking down trying to talk without cursing. So she makes a deal with him, hey, you know what, just curse once every two sentences or so. You know, I mean, like, let's just try scaling back the cursing. You know, it's just kind of funny. So, all right. So, they go to bed, they wake up, and they come across an abandoned camp. And Hurin says there was definitely murder done here. And they continue heading towards the River Arinen. And they find some dead bodies every once in a while. It's just not pretty. It's gross. And it's like they're...
Yeah, it's kind of like they were left there to warn them.
Right, exactly. It's almost like they're chasing after a psychotic dark friend or something.
Yeah, who's leaving a nice trail for him.
Right.
It's like, this here is so big for you, you can't miss it.
Right.
it's like a big old neon sign flashing. This way.
Except for it's like a neon body instead.
Mm-hmm.
Mm-hmm. So eventually they come to a village and they search the buildings and Rand kind of gets trapped in a vision inside one of them. What are your thoughts on that, aside from it's gross?
Well, it was just weird, and I didn't know why he's getting the vision, because it didn't seem like anybody else was.
Right. So you wonder whether...
I didn't know if that was part of, like, the channeling.
Now, I was going to say that...
If it's him going crazy.
Yeah, it might be... It might have to do with channeling. They never really fully say what it is. In fact, they never really touch on it all that much. I do think that it was planted by Fane. But outside, But outside of that, that's all I can say, is that it was meant for Rand, I think.
So you mean like it was kind of like, almost like there was like an invisible barrier that he walked, but if he walked through it, he would get hit with the vision, but it would only affect him.
I think so. Or maybe it wouldn't only affect him, but Fane was hoping that would be his, or maybe he didn't care who it affected, he just knew he'd screw somebody up. You know, I don't know, but I do think it came from Fane. And in a few years, we can explain why. So.
Okay. Yeah. Don't want to get too much away.
Right. I'm pretty bad about that sometimes, so. And the last thing I have for this chapter is that after Rand kind of snaps out of it, there's an alarm sounding, and when he goes to figure out why, they find a Murdral staked alive to a door, or staked while he was alive, but
yeah.
To a door, and that's kind of scary.
That's kind of, like, impressive.
Yeah, in a way that's
scary,
probably not
like,
good.
Oh my god, you can kill Murderall? Like, you know, while he's alive, staking him to the door. That's kind of...
Yeah. Yeah, that's...
You're wondering, like, what did he do to piss someone off?
Not just that, but who can do that? You know, yeah. I mean, like, Murderalls, they're not even fully of this plane, you know? I mean, they're half
right.
Here, half somewhere else. Like, to
yeah,
be able to do that, that's...
It's the Fade, right?
Yeah, exactly. That's scary. So that puts everybody kind of on their toes. Like, okay, this is more than just a dark friend we're facing after. So, anything else on Chapter 10 that stood out?
No. I think we covered it.
I think we did. I agree. All right. Moving on over. Chapter 11. Titled Glimmers of the Pattern. Kind of a cool name. All right. So, give me 1 second. I'm sorry. I'm going to let the dog out so I don't have to listen to him. I'm going to lock you out there. I'll let you burn up in the sun. For that one person listening at home, I'm not actually locking my dog outside to burn up in the sun. All right. So, Chapter 11, Glimmers of the Pattern. So, following the end of the last chapter where you had the Murdral and the weird visions and the creepy town and all that stuff.
Yeah.
The next day, they kind of do a shorter walk. You know, like they call an end of the day a lot earlier because of that. So, Oh, and there's two point of views here. I've been trying to point that out when there are, so I failed already. So you have Rand's point of view, and then later we have Pat and Fane's point of view. So, Rand is still kind of reeling from what he saw in that room. Like it seems to have really affected him. And he starts thinking, man, maybe I'm already going mad. Maybe I'm screwed.
Yeah.
You know, so.
Exactly.
Following that also, Ingtar... It's like we need a better watch, so he sets up a stronger watch as well. So Ingtar tells Rand that the village was deserted. The last village they went through was deserted because the Trollocs basically made the people of the village their next meal. So they basically herded all of the people and were like, okay, you're coming with us because the Trollocs are eventually going to eat you. So that's pretty pleasant. And he says that half men like to have their fun, so you can take that how you want to, but probably not good.
No, so, I wouldn't want to be around them.
No, no, I don't think they'd make... This is, and I think I've brought this up before, but not just in this story, but in so many, I don't know why anybody would want to be on the bad guy side, because they all seem to treat their underlings like crap, no matter what story it is. Like, on the bad guy side, if you're not in charge, it sucks.
Yeah, so how do they get all these followers?
Right. I don't know. Power.
Power.
Promise of power. Promise of money.
Or people just like to be mean, and yeah. Feel allowed to be mean.
Again, that kind of fits with the power, though, right? I mean,
yeah, exactly.
Like, you feel like you've been stomped on your whole life, so you decide, well, these guys say that I can become the stomper. So
exactly.
Yeah. All right. So, Ingtar tells Rand that. He's second in charge. That if he were to die, then Rand would be in charge. And Rand's like, I'm a sheep herder. That doesn't make any sense. Make Uno your second in charge. Like, he's a soldier. He should be second in charge. And he's like, nope. Nope. I was told that it's you, so it's you. So, and then he lets him know that everybody else knows that it's him, too. Everybody, of course, except for Loyal and Matt and Perrin.
Right.
Know that Rand is second in command, so...
Yeah.
And Rand's like, Moraine? Aes Sedai still meddling in my business.
Exactly.
So Rand takes the package that Uno gave him, that Ingtar gave him, takes it off into the woods where he can be alone, he opens it, and what does he find? Banner of the Dragon.
Yep.
Just what you want to have is people seeing you as calling yourself the Dragon Reborn.
Yeah, exactly.
I don't see how that would go wrong at all.
No.
So right as he opens it, and he's like, oh crap, Perrin and Matt stumble upon him, and then it's like, well, oh crap, and Matt's like, oh great, now you can lord this over us too. Lord Rand, you know, and Rand's like, guys, I just wanted to apologize to you. I was trying to drive you guys away, and I didn't want to hurt you, and then he kind of explains that Moraine's trying to set him up as a false dragon, and Perrin's like, well, wait a minute. If she thinks you're a false dragon, then can you channel? And he goes, I can. I don't want to, and I want to never channel again, but yes, I can. And Matt's like, I'm out.
And he kept saying, well, that's why I was pushing you away. He's trying to explain himself, why he's like, this is why I was like being such an asshole to you guys, because I don't want to hurt you.
Right, exactly. He's like, see? And Matt's like, well... why didn't you just not come with us? So, so Rand explains, I came with you because I want to help you find the dagger, and I feel like I can help you find the dagger. And Matt's like, oh, well, I guess I'm an asshole, huh? It's like, you're doing this, you're with us just to help me. And he's like, yeah,
yes.
That was my whole point. So Matt, because he's the king of open mouth, insert foot, it's like, you're not mad already, are you? Like, you're not going to kill us all already, are you? And he's like, no, I don't think so. Or am I? No, but, Rand starts thinking, well, maybe she gave this to me to try to force me to run. You know, like, now she gave me something that can get me killed by any soldier that sees it. So maybe she did this to try to, like, push me away from everybody else, which, of course, isn't true, but...
Right. Well, and then Matt and Perrin are like, oh, God, now we're in more trouble, too, because we're with you. They all know that we were friends beforehand, and, like, now we could be, you know...
Well, and I feel like Perrin understands the situation a little more than Matt, because Matt's just, you know, he's Matt. Whereas Perrin's had to deal with the wolves already, his connection to the wolves. So he's done, he's felt that, like, one against the world feeling already.
Yeah.
That Rand is clearly feeling right now. And you have to remember, too, they're 18-year-old kids, you know?
Yeah.
How, most of these soldiers are probably, I assume they're at least well into their 20s, and a lot of them are older than that, you know? I see Uno as probably 40, you know?
Yeah. Well, the thing is, his parent doesn't help anything. He's like, yeah, because they tell all the stories that they hear about people channeling and what happens, and parents like, yeah, I'm not going to sleep near you. Don't mind me, but, you know.
How about this?
Far away from you.
How about you sleep over there, and we will sleep over there. We'll call it good. So, yeah.
Yeah.
So they're super scared, and for good reason. I mean, like you said, any story of a man channeling doesn't end up well. So, at least not for people around him. I mean, look at our prologue to the first book. That's the stories they know.
But, like, some of the stories that they were telling, I think that those were kind of stories that got blown out of proportion that their mothers told them about someone who could channel.
Of course it is. They're from the Two Rivers.
You know, where the guy who rolled over and, like, basically knocked down everything.
Yeah, they're from the Two Rivers. They had never met anybody, man or woman, who could channel before Moraine.
Right.
That they knew of. They had met Nynaeve and they had met Egwene, but still.
Yeah.
They had never met anybody that they knew of, so. That pretty much ends the chapter. Rand goes to lie down to go to bed, and he kind of distances himself, lays down next to a stone, and surrounded by the void, he falls asleep next to Loial and Hurin.
Yes.
We move on to Padan Fain's point of view, the most sane character in this entire story.
Oh, Jesus. Yeah.
So, their group is south, obviously. We've been moving south this, for the most part, this whole time. And he's thinking about how he used to be a dark friend, but then he was summoned by Alzamond and told that he needed to find these three young men and keep tabs on them, basically. And that would, of course, be Rand, Perrin, and Matt. Mm-hmm. And then any information he finds, he needed to give back to him. And then he followed him to Shatter Logoth, and then he became more than a dark friend. And then he got the dagger, and he became more than a dark friend. And now he's addicted to the dagger. And then he basically tells the villagers, hey, I'm going to start feeding you guys to, well, I've already started. I fed all the, you know, the servants and the poor people to the Trollocs, but now we're going to start sending you guys to feeding you to Trollocs unless you can, you know, prove to me that you're not worthless. And, I mean, it's just such a positive story, just a positive mindset. Then he remembers about how he killed the Murdrel and drove the spikes through his hands, and so we find that out, that he's the one who did that, to hung up the Murdrel. So
yes, and he had a happy memory there.
Yeah, very happy. Well, how could it not be happy? I mean,
yes,
that it's got to be the most positive thing that has happened in his life in a long time. So. Ah, it's awful. Disgusting man. So, and then he tells, he turns to the Trollocs and he orders them to kill the prisoners, but leave them in a pile so to make sure that those following them, that they'll find them, a pile of carcasses. So, it's kind of gross. So, so now you have all these dark friends who are mortally afraid of him, of Fain, and of the Trollocs, and now they know that the Trollocs are looking to kill him and eat some of them and pile up the rest of them, and you have Fain telling them, yeah, you guys are pretty much worthless to me, so it's only a matter of time, so.
Exactly.
So, yeah, it's a lovely little point of view. Did you have anything else you wanted to talk about on this point of view?
So just, like, how Pattinson seems to be going more and more crazy. So it's almost like the touch of the taint has hit him as well.
Yeah. Yeah, that's a good... And he's got something of the Dark One in him, and it does... He is certainly on his way to crazyhood if he's not well on his way. He's well on his way if he's not there already.
On the crazy train.
Guess what? He doesn't die, so at this point, he's going to get crazier. So, if you can believe it.
Maybe he's going to claim himself to be the Dark One.
Maybe. And he does mention Toman Head again. So, we'll dance on Toman Head, and I'll be free of you. That's not happening. I'm not getting up to let you outside so you can come right back in. All right. Anything else on Chapter 11?
No, I think we hit most of the key points.
I think you're probably right. So let's move on to Chapter 12. Chapter 12, titled Woven in the Pattern. So, Egwene, we're back, we're gone from that group, we're back in Faldara again, as the Amerlin's group prepares to leave. Right. Like, they're headed back to Tarvala. So, Egwene kind of goes running up to the Amerlin's palanquin, and she wants to find out what's causing all the turmoil, because of course she does. Egwene has to know everything, you know, I mean, Egwene wants to know everything, wants to learn everything, and wants it right now. That's just kind of the way her personality works.
Exactly.
Very Amerlin-like. So, I think it's funny, the Amerlin, the first time she sees her, kind of looks her up and down, it's like, It's like, that's someone who knows what she wants to do, so.
Yes.
So they, her and Nynaeve are coming up on the Amerlin, and they learned that somebody had shot that arrow, so they weren't right there to see it all, but they learned that she's been nicked by the arrow, and that the bowman has not been caught, and I didn't ask you after that, what are your thoughts on that bowman? Who do you think it is? Like, they had brought up a bad shot for a white cloak, do you think it's a white cloak? Do you think it's just a dark friend? Do you think it's, you know, any ideas?
Leandrin.
Yeah, it must be Leandrin. Very good call. I can't believe you figured that out. All right. So,
was I right?
No.
Oh.
But that's okay. Yeah, I guess I should tell you when you're wrong so that you're not, like, moving forward assuming that you nailed it, and that it was Leandrin. But, so she mentions that fish guts, she's been hurt worse than this by hooking herself with a fish hook or something along those lines.
The reason why I thought it was Leandrin...
It's because you hate Leandrin?
Well, no, because it was such a poor shot, but...
Sure.
Because Rand was right there, and it just missed Rand.
Yeah,
Rand was the target.
Right, and you'd also think that with it being a poor shot, it'd probably be someone who's not super familiar with shooting a bow.
Yeah.
Right? I mean... So, so they meet up with the Amerlin, and Moraine admits that they're the two novices that she had been talking to the Amerlin about before. And the Amerlin points out that she can sense the spark in each of them, and that it's a fine spark, it's a strong spark. Mm-hmm. And Egwene is kind of like not overly happy about the Amerlin and the way she's looking at her, like like, yes, I can use this one. So
yeah, well, she's the one who needs to be in charge. She doesn't want to be used.
Exactly. Very, very similar personalities, I think. So, so the order is given to take off, and the group mount and head on their way back to Tar Valon. And they're, as they're leaving, the, you know, everybody from the town's cheering. You wonder whether they're cheering because finally the Aes Sedai are leaving and maybe crap can get back to normal, or if they're just, you know, being nice to the Aes Sedai. Either way, kind of amounts to the same thing. They're like, yay, you're leaving.
Yeah.
But Egwene is, like I said, not super happy. So she's also concerned for Rand, you know, because she's never really been away from Rand. And Nynaeve comforts her by saying, hey, you know, you don't have to worry about Rand because he has Ikhtar and all those soldiers with him. It's not like something can happen. So, dun-dun-dun.
yeah, never say never.
Right. Anytime you say something like that in any kind of story, it's just foreboding.
It's just
foreshadowing.
The worst to happen.
Yeah. It's like, oh, you thought that's all that could happen. Well, check this out.
Exactly.
So, they're moving pretty quickly, going as fast as they can, more or less. They're setting up camp real late at night, waking up real early, taking off, you know. I thought it was interesting that each Aja that's there kind of has their own tent. So there's still not a unified tower necessarily. It's like all the Ajahs hang out with themselves and only themselves. So their warriors are out there guarding it in the night or sleeping outside it. I mean, it shows that there's probably some issues in the White Tower. They're not the unified front that they pretend they are.
They're not all singing Kumbaya.
Correct, yes. So, I lost where I was in my notes. So, Lan comes to see Nynaeve once, but she gets all pissed off and's like, get out of here. You already said we can't be together, so why are you even coming? Why are you making me remember? So he sulks off and, continues to watch her tent along with Moraine's tent. Moraine didn't come anywhere near him. Like, she left the girls alone as well. Kind of speaking with her own sisters and kind of like, well, I don't care about you guys anymore. I have realized that I had to play around with now.
I don't know. Like it's like she's up to something and that, and she has her own reasons for not, like,
Moraine is always up to something.
So, yeah, I feel like there's something in the... She's set out to, and she's doing it on purpose.
Oh, of course she is. Oh, absolutely she is. And the only sisters who she doesn't have her little meetings with are the Reds, including your favorite Aes Sedai, Leandrin.
Yeah.
So...
who ends up getting her little hooks into...
Egwene. Yeah. Like, you gotta like that. Hopefully Egwene will turn out just like her.
Oh.
Alright.
Well, no, they don't like her. They you know.
Oh, I know. Alright, so each night when they rest, you know, like when they're done traveling, a different Aes Sedai will show up in their tent and kind of give them a quick lesson. So the first night is Varen Sedai, Varen Mathwin. I think we've talked about Varen before. What are your thoughts on Varen?
We like Varen, remember?
I love Varen, so.
She's the only other one that knows about...
Yep, that's right.
...about Rand.
Yep. Varen is awesome and remains awesome. She's just... I think I mentioned last time, I see her as like my kindly old grandma, you know?
Yeah.
So she shows up to teach Egwene, and I think her strategy is kind of funny, because for Egwene, she's like, don't you want to learn more? Like, you go to the tower, you can learn so much more. And for Nynaeve, she's like, well, you know, if you learn enough on our way to the tower, maybe you won't even have to be a novice. You know, novices, they have to do chores, they have to clean dishes, scrub floors. You know, you learn enough, maybe you can start out just being an accepted, not a novice. So I think it's funny that she quickly picks up on personality cues, and it's like, yes.
Yeah, and how to motivate them, exactly.
Exactly. So, and she nails it, because she's Varen, and Varen knows all. So, all right. So, Egwene and Nynaeve they try to embrace the source. They struggle to embrace it. You know, I mean, they're brand new. They don't know a whole lot.
Right.
Egwene feels a little bit of Sidar, but nothing more than that. But she does kind of see it around others for the first time. So that's kind of cool. So, who else visits them? What other Aes Sedai visit
Doesn't
them?
Doesn't Landon visit
she
them?
She does.
And that good. Caused a little bit of a spark.
Yep, that one didn't go over quite as well. Nynaeve kind of flipped crap on her, so... and then also Anaya visits. And Anaya is told by Egwene that, about her dreams. And she says, oh, maybe you're a dreamer. We haven't had one of those in hundreds of years. So, which I think is kind of funny. So if they haven't had a dreamer in hundreds of years, how are they going to be able to tell if her dreams mean anything? Like, you have no reference as to what would make her a dreamer. So
well,
I just,
I'm sure the Browns have some kind of reference.
That's fair. The Browns probably would know something. If anybody does, they would. But unfortunately, Anaya's not a Brown, so, you know. So she basically tells her, well, it could be a foretelling, but it also just could be a nightmare, and you're an 18-year-old girl who's missing her boy for the first time, you know, I mean, which actually does make some sense, you know, I mean, this is Egwene's first time being away from Rand, so it makes sense that she'd be dreaming of Rand, so.
Yeah, but, you know, the way the pattern weaves, I have a feeling not. I think they both have more power in them than we're realizing.
It's
just like Rand has them. Like, everybody has more power than all those people from Two Rivers.
Especially with the like the specificity, I guess, of her dreams. She's not just having a random dream of her boyfriend. I mean, she is dreaming of specific situations, of specific scary people. Oh, standing over him, breaking, you know, absolutely. So we get a good feeling that Egwene is probably a dreamer or is on her way to dreamerness. So
you know what I'm wondering?
What's that?
It just came to me now that because they were from the Two Rivers and they said, you know how it was Manithrin, it was old blood. And because they haven't really intermarried with many people, like, the old blood is still pretty true.
Right, so absolutely.
Old blood is, like, why they're more powerful.
That's a good call. That it plays into the fact that that they're pure, if you will. You know, they haven't gotten themselves mixed in with a bunch of people who can't channel.
Exactly.
There's no mudbloods there, you know what I mean? They pretty much, you know, stay away from all those muggles and... Oh, wait, wrong story. Anything else stand out to you on Chapter 12?
Nope. I just gave you my great insight.
You did. Do you remember how I said we were going to go for a car ride today and a walk? If you don't shut up, we're not going for either. Okay?
Yes, Dad.
I don't know why he's acting up so much.
Well, look who his father is.
I don't understand what you mean. All right. Final chapter today. Chapter 13. Titled, From Stone to Stone.
Dun, 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 dun.
Right? Very ominous sounding. So we're back with Rand and Loial and Huron. So the next morning, Rand wakes up, and nobody's there except for him and Loial and Huron. And he's like, oh. So, and even more alarming, the stone that they fell asleep next to is now standing up instead of being buried. So, he's a little concerned, and he
a little concerned.
Just a little bit, yeah.
He woke up and got to be in panic.
Of course, absolutely.
Full blown out.
And he notices
that's
that
like a little pregnant.
Right, exactly. So he notices that the land around him is kind of dull, like kind of almost out of focus and pale. So he wakes up, Loial and Huron. And he's like, okay, you guys tell me I'm dreaming. And they're like, this isn't good.
Like
what's going on here? So, Loial, because he knows a little bit about everything, he's like, well, I think I might know what happened. I'm Loial. I'm a sad donkey. But, he basically says, I think we might have traveled using the stone, and now we're in a different world, and we're kind of screwed. So that's good, right?
Yeah,
we're just going to probably die over here because there's nothing to eat or drink or other people or anything.
Yeah.
So yay us! So, Huron immediately thinks that the Aes Sedai did something to him.
Of course.
And Rand's like, no, the Aes Sedai don't have a reason to hurt you. But Huron's like, oh, it had to have been them. So Loial explains what he knows about the stone, which isn't a lot, but that he saw in a book, of course, one of these stones. And
tell you, him and Baron should get together.
Oh, the stories they could tell each other, except for neither one of them stops talking for long enough. Actually, no, it would be Loial talking and Varen listening, because she's perfectly good with collecting stories, whereas he's more of the I have to talk. So I swear to God, dog.
That would be a great side story, you know, when you're talking about how you want people to write.
Oh, yeah.
That aren't in the book. What if Loial and Baron got together?
That would be a good side story, Mr. South Africa, who's listening. That'd be a great side story. And it could be emailed to adventuresinrandland@gmail.com. And then we'd read it live on the air so everyone could hear your wonderful story, South Africa. But, all right. So, the quote that, from the book that talked about these stones said, from stone to stone, run the lines of if between the worlds that might be. And that this comes from either the Age of Legends or maybe even before the Age of Legends, but it's his understanding that the Aes Sedai from the Age of Legends use these stones to travel to both different worlds and different places in this world. So it's just kind of a crazy, kind of like last book we went through the ways.
Right.
This seems kind of like that without the evil wind chasing
you. Yes.
So
hasn't been tainted.
And it also seems way more instant, you know?
Right.
So, And kind of random, too. So, Rand becomes uneasy when the Aes Sedai are brought up and the thought that you had to channel to make it work comes up, because he, of course, knows that he can channel. So he's like, oh, this sucks. I did this. That's not good. So, also, the book, I should have mentioned this earlier, it also says that these stones are all over the place, but nobody ever really sees them because they're kind of buried in the ground. So you don't randomly come across one. You have to know they're there, basically. So,
yeah.
That no one he knows has ever found one. But they do seem to be scattered all over the place, so.
And it's funny because it almost made me think like they're on the flip side of the world, because this one's standing up. So was the nub the other side of the world?
Right, right. It's what do they call it in what's the Netflix show, Stranger Things? The underside, or the upside down world?
The upside down world, yeah.
Something like that, yeah. Yeah, it does kind of feel that way, right? Like the world that they're in now seems to be the correct world, because you can see more of the stone.
Yeah.
Interesting. Bizarro world. All right. So, Hurin suddenly has become, like, super servant. He's like, well, Lord Rand, how are we going to get out of this? You're going to get us out of this, aren't you, Lord Rand? I mean, that's what lords do. Is they get people out of situations.
Yeah.
So.
Exactly.
So Hurin, just.
Hurin also knew that he was the second in command, right?
Right. Yes, he did. And, of course, everybody in the group, minus, those that we've been following since the beginning of the story, they see all the boys, but especially Rand, as, some kind of Western lord, like a high-ranking lord, probably tied into the royal family somehow. He can tell them, every time he tells them that he's just a sheepherder, it's like it's further and further into their head that he must be, like, an even higher lord.
Yeah, exactly.
And Hurin takes it to a whole new level. He's just like, well, surely you know how to get us out of this situation that no one's ever seen before. So Rand takes it on to himself, like, oh, well, Hurin thinks I'm a lord and I need to get out of this situation, so I need to get us out of this situation. Good times. So I got him into this. I need to get him out, basically, is what he's thinking. So.
Yeah.
So he does. He promises Hurin that he'll do his best by his house and by his honor. He will do his best to get them out of this situation. So, and this makes Hurin feel a whole lot better. Because if the Lord says he's going to get us out of this situation, then obviously the Lord is going to get us out of this situation.
Okay, go on.
No, you please.
No, I'm like, but didn't he
get him into the situation
before
in the first,
or after, like, he was kind of goaded to try and use the power to reverse it?
And that's what he does, is he goes back to the stone, and he's just trying to, like, make it all work, and it just isn't. He can't even get himself to channel, much less get the stone to work. So, the void shattered into 1,000 razor shards is what they said. So it's probably not good.
No.
Loyal's confused because he doesn't know that Rand can channel, and he's trying to figure out why Rand thinks that. He's like, but I already told you that you have to channel to get it to work, so what makes you think you're going to be able to get it to work?
Exactly.
Like, and Loyal is, he's Eeyore, so it doesn't put the pieces together. Like, wait a minute. I told you had to be able to channel, yet you're trying to use it. No, you can't channel. There's no way. So.
Right.
And Hurin's, like, as far as, like, as far to one side as Loyal's confusement goes, Huron goes that far or farther the other side, just being all confident, like, no, he'll find a way. He's Lord Grand. He'll get us out of this.
You know? Yeah.
He'll get us home. We'll be fine.
We'll find the dark for you, friends, and they'll tell us how to do it.
Right. So, they decide to at least start walking. Huron says, well, Lord Grand, I can still smell the dark friends. I can still smell the trail. It's not very, it's a lot fainter, but I can still smell it. And he goes, oh, it's older then? We're farther away? He goes, no, not older necessarily, just fainter. You know, like,
yeah.
And you kind of get the idea that that's what this whole world is it's just fainter. You know, I mean.
Yeah.
So,
It's like not quite black and white.
Right.
The upside down world. But it's like the colors aren't as bright. The smells aren't as bright. You know, everything is dulled.
Yeah, that's exactly right. I agree. Yeah, it's like you're looking at it through water almost. You know, where you can't see everything quite right. Except for that shark that's trying to come eat you. Run away.
Yeah.
It's my understanding that if a shark is looking to eat you, you just need to lay there and not try to swim away. And try to control your heartbeat, because they can sense your heartbeat. And if it's going fast, they're just going to eat you. But if it's not, they might not. So, Shark Week. All right. I'm in Kansas, though, so we don't have sharks.
No.
We just have unbearable heat. You know, the one time I went out there, I spent the final hour trying to see a shark, and none showed up.
Aww.
I was like, well, maybe I can at least see a seal, and I'll get to see something eat the seal. But nope, didn't see that either. I was disappointed.
The sea lions here are like beans in the butts.
Oh, really?
Especially when they start walking in the middle of the night.
That's awesome. Not for you, though.
Or when they get up on the docks, and they're not very clean.
Apparently, there's an island off of Australia, I think, that used to be like the great white shark capital of the world. That's where there were more great whites out there than anywhere else. But a couple of orcas moved in, and they've just been hunting all the great whites. So now they're spreading out to other areas because they're all getting eaten by orcas. So.
Well, there's this one place here that I used to train when I used to do triathlons up Zuma Beach, and there are a lot of dolphins there.
Okay.
And the dolphins, because there's another cove where all the sharks are, but the dolphins protect.
Yeah, I've heard stories about dolphins that protect people even from sharks. I think that's pretty badass.
And I remember swimming there once, and dolphins and then sea lions. One time I popped up to take a breath of air, and there was like a sea lion's face right there, and I was like, oh, fuck.
What does that say about humanity when all these animals, and they're not alone, I've heard stories about lots of different kinds of animals that for one reason or another decide they're going to protect humans, and we are like terrible to all the animals, but they want to protect us.
Exactly.
It's like, oh, thanks, dolphin. Just don't get too close to that tuna because, well, I mean, you're going to die if you do because our nets are going to get you. Sorry.
Yeah.
You know? Hey, but we'll probably eat you too, so that's good, right?
Right.
I mean, all right. Well, now that we've gone 17 degrees away from the story. So Huron says, well, I can still smell the trail, and Rand is surprised that he can smell it, but he's like, all right, well, let's follow the trail then. So they do. They head out after Fane again, and after the horn, after the dagger, you know, after all that good stuff, they follow the trail because at least that's something instead of just sitting there and dying. Loyal, though, is not quite so sure that that's a good idea. He feels like they should stick by the stone, and eventually they'll find a way that however they got there, that'll get them back. But Bran, it's pretty sure that he's the reason they got there, and he doesn't know how to make them get back, so sitting there by the stone's not going to do them any good. So yeah.
And he already tried.
And he tried, and he failed miserably, so.
Yes. But there's other stones, so maybe, you know, maybe it's a one stone. One
yeah, maybe they need to find another stone and head back. I like it. So they mount their horses and they join up with Huron and they start off. They notice that the world is beyond strange. It's like almost like they're dizzy as they're riding. That stuff that appeared distant from the corner of their eye seemed real close to them out of nowhere. I mean, it's just almost like you said, an upside down world. So.
And I was surprised that the horses poured it with them.
Yes, that is a little bit strange, but I think it fills a plot hole. They needed horses, so they got horses. Yeah, I mean that's the way fantasy works. That's the way fiction works.
The book troubles.
That is right, Miss Carrie. All right. Anything else on chapter 13?
Nope.
Yeah, I don't either. That's pretty much it. So.
But I do think that they'll meet up with everybody again. I'm not sure how, I'm not sure when, but I'm pretty sure they'll meet up with everybody.
So you don't think this story's going to end with Loyal and Rand and Huron dying in some other world, and because of that, the world that they're from dies because he's not there to fight the last battle, et cetera, et cetera?
No, because then that would make the series of books be down to, like, two
books instead of 14? Yeah, that's probably fair.
Yeah.
All right. Well, next week. Well, before we get into next week, I brought up the writing challenge. I haven't brought it up in a couple of weeks. Well, for one, a couple of weeks ago, we weren't even here, so... that would be one reason why, but another is because I kind of forgot. So yes, I want somebody to write me a story. Wendy, you said you had a friend who might start listening, right?
Yes.
Well, she needs to be our first story. I want a story that fits into what we're talking about, so I fully expect it from her now. So write us a story that fits into book two. And if you get really excited, you can turn around and write one for book one as well. And I'll personally read it on the air when we're done with book two. That'll be part of our we're done with book two episode.
There you go.
You can send out any comments, any questions, any suggestions to us at adventuresinrandland@gmail.com. That's where you can send your stories as well. Whether you're listening on iTunes or whatever, wherever else you listen to, I used to know of all the names of them, but I forgot them. So, you know, I'm not very well prepared. Tough shit. But yeah, give us a rating, rate us, give us a review. You know, tell other people about us. Make people listen to us. Tell them how much fun you have spending an hour of your time every week with Wendy and Andy, you know? So yeah, next week, we're sticking to this book because it'd be weird if we just jumped around all willy-nilly like. We are going to do 7 chapters next week, chapters 14 through 20.
Wow.
Yes, which means they're shorter chapters.
That's what I was thinking.
You don't get to read more. You just have shorter chapters. So what do you think is going to happen next week?
Well, I think the girls are going to make it to the tower.
Okay.
And I'm thinking that Rand, Huron, and Loyal might run into some people.
Like, not
the... friends.
Some dark friends. Okay. Anything?
I don't want, but like.
You don't like the prediction game, do you?
I don't, because, you know.
Well, see, I can't do the predictions because I'd be 100%. I get them all right. All right.
I think we're going to still be going along this storyline in the upside down world.
There you go. All right. Well, I will stop playing the prediction game with you. All right. Well, for the two of you listening, one in St. Louis who seems to have left us last week, but hopefully he'll find his way back, and the one in South Africa, and then the potential new listener in
San Antonio.
Thank you for listening, and we will see you next week with chapters 14 through 20. And we're roughly a third of the way through this book, so we haven't really even hit the main plot points yet. We're just starting to build them up, and I'm excited for it because I really like this book. So.
I know you don't. Well, cool.
And I like the next book more than this book, and I like the fourth book more than the third book, and I like the fifth book more than the fourth book. Well, maybe not more than the fourth, but it's right up there with it, and then it gets weird for a while. But, all right. Well, Wendy, I will see you Monday.
That sounds good.
Listeners, I will talk to you Wednesday when I have this posted. See you then. Bye.
Ciao.
I had a chow once. It's a good dog.